Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Do you sometimes feel like we're drowning in bad news? Have you ever come back from vacation when you weren't paying attention to news and started reading news again online or in the paper? And it really strikes you how negative most of the news is. The headlines show how celebrity-obsessed we are and how focused the media are on the sensational, lurid, and shocking things that go on. Good news can be hard to find, but there's certainly plenty of it out there. You just have to look for it. That's why on American Variety, we have an occasional series that I call Good News Week. It's just me, without a guest, reading stories from around the country and the world that are upbeat, interesting, inspiring, or in some cases just goofy and kind of silly, in a good way. This week, I'm going to focus on that kind of story, what I call odd news. And since we're in the holiday season, we'll start with some Christmas-themed stories. Here's one regarding Santa Claus's house for sale. It's from The Domain Reporter, which I think is based in Australia. Many people have speculated about what the inside of Santa's house looks like, but now we have photo evidence. Father Christmas's house has been listed for sale for $657,000 on real estate site Zillow. As giving out the full address may compromise future Christmases forever, the listing simply states the house is in the North Pole. The three-bedroom house is on a 10-hectare, and a hectare is 2.5 acres, so about a 25-acre block that functions as the Christmas headquarters of the world, with a workshop nearby. The property also has a garage with sleigh parking and stables for a fleet of reindeer. According to the listing, the house is a toy lover's paradise nestled on 25 idyllic acres at the North Pole, perfect for spirited reindeer games. Many people have speculated about what the inside of Santa's house looks like, but now we have photo evidence. The home is steeped in old-world charm, but offers modern-day amenities, it continues. The home was built in 1822 from old log timber and had renovations done in 2013. Inside the cozy timber house is a river rock fireplace reaching to the ceiling, which is perfect for relaxing next to after the hectic Christmas preparations. The custom-designed kitchen is set up as a production line for making Christmas treats. The oven has 12 cookie settings, and the fridge is full of glasses of milk. Down the hallway is the office for letter-writing correspondence and toy repairs. The house also has an expansive toy display with prototypes for a wide variety of toys and also lumps of coal. Zillow said in a press release that the home is priced according to comparable homes in remote locations with a Santa premium. Each bedroom has a fireplace, mountain views, and decor following a strict red, green, and white color scheme. The tinsel is constrained to a minimum around the house, but there is a holly wreath in each room. Just after Christmas, the house is still for sale. The owner might be open to a lower offer. So here's a couple of Christmas-themed stories from other parts of the world and here, too. You've seen this kind of thing where people dive into frozen water. So this is from Brighton, England, from a newspaper called The Independent in the UK. A council is trying to stop swimmers taking a traditional Christmas Day dip by closing off beaches. Brighton and Hove Council said it was prompted to take action after unusually mild weather had drawn more people to the beaches, with many getting close to the crashing waves. The local authority fears more Christmas swimmers will be tempted into the sea and get hypothermia. But the restrictions had been criticized for being counterproductive to people's health and enforcing a nanny state. The council has warned, sea temperatures so far this winter are around 11 degrees centigrade, but can drop to around 5 degrees or even colder. That'd be like high 30s. Even on an apparently clear sunny day, the sea temperature can lower body temperature quickly and fatally. It only takes a few minutes for the body's core temperature to drop by 2 degrees and for the onset of hypothermia to begin. Several people have drowned swimming off Brighton's beaches in recent years. In July, a 44-year-old man from southwest London drowned after getting into difficulties east of Brighton's Palace Pier. In 2014, the council also closed Brighton's beaches after a swimmer got into trouble, interrupting the 150-year-long Christmas Day tradition. But health campaigner John Capp told local newspaper The Argus, "I would say the ban is a stupid idea. I would say that it is counterproductive to health. I don't think anybody will take any notice. You cannot fence off the beach. You cannot stop people going in. This is the nanny state. They should have better things to do." Seafront operations manager Chris Ingle said in a statement, "The continuing mild weather has meant that, as with last year, the seafront has been much busier than in previous years. It's been great to see so many people enjoying a stroll on the promenade, and it's good news for seafront businesses, but we would ask people to stay on the path or high up on the beach, especially when the sea conditions are rough. Do not allow children to play chicken with the surf washing up the beach. We see this regularly on big winter surf days, and this is precisely how people become washed out to sea. Sea swimming takes skill, stamina, and knowledge of the physical dangers, and should only be for the very experienced, using suitable wetsuits in very calm conditions and with a friend. Oh, gee. Even on a calm day, sea currents, undertow, or a sudden change in weather can create life-threatening hazards without warning. Even experienced swimmers can get caught out. So here's a similar thing from Alaska. This is on was on Sky News. More than 1,000 people in Alaska have plunged into water at temperatures below freezing to raise money for the state's disabled athletes. So this is in the category of good news that's odd news. The swimmers, some in elaborate costumes, gathered at Goose Lake in Anchorage for the annual fundraiser. A part of the ice was cut away, allowing swimmers space for a dive, a cannonball, or even a timid step into the freezing water. David Araman, who came from Philadelphia to take part, said he had happily braved the O.C. water temperature for a great cause. "I'm new to Alaska, and this is one way to be baptized," he added. Special Olympics Alaska President Jim Balamachi said the fundraiser, which was running for the eighth year, brought in more than $300,000. Mr. Balamachi and his team run a year-round sports training and athletic competition for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. He added, "When you have 1,000 athletes coming out on one of the shortest days of the year in the middle of winter to jump into 32-degree water, to say, you know what, we're just going to unite our communities, we're going to accept everybody, and we're going to do this all together. It just warms my heart." That sounds pretty good. It's better than the usual polar bear story. All right, here's another post-Christmas story. The man who robbed a bank in a Santa mask handed out candy canes first. This is on the Huffington Post. The popular Christmas song, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, warns kids not to cry or pout, but it doesn't say anything about not robbing banks. Now police in Memphis, Tennessee, are trying to find a man who robbed a bank on Wednesday while wearing a Santa mask. The criminal Chris Kringle walked into the Memphis City Employees Credit Union on Elvis Presley Boulevard around 10 a.m. on December 22nd, sporting the trademark white beard, red coat, and red hat with fluffy white trim, according to WMC-TV. He handed out candy canes to people in the bank and even wished them a Merry Christmas. Then the thieving Santa handed the bank teller a note demanding cash, the Commercial Appeal newspaper reports. The teller gave Santa an undisclosed amount of money and he left the bank. However, he didn't leap into a sleigh or any kind of getaway car. Surveillance video shows him walking down Raines Road, according to the newspaper. No one was hurt except, of course, for the Christmas spirit. That's kind of low to come and do something bad like this here. That reflects on the kids, is how customer Angelo Becton reacted when he heard about the robbery. No arrests have been made. Anyone with information is encouraged to call 901-528-CASH. The real Santa Claus was unavailable to comment on the robber's naughty list status. All right, so we got one here on, these are like a series of good news stories about animals that are also kind of odd news. Georgia firefighters rescue deer tangled in rope or cord swinging from tree. This is in Alpharetta, Georgia, on December 23rd. Firefighters in Georgia were caught on video rescuing a deer that became tangled in a rope or cord hanging from a tree. A video posted to Facebook by the Alpharetta Department of Public Safety shows the buck trying to escape from the object and then swinging in the air when it attempts to run. Firefighters are able to use a blanket to hold the deer's antlers against the tree while they cut through the binding. The deer, apparently uninjured, runs off into the woods after being freed. I saw this video, and they finally, they were like standing around, the deer was going nuts, and, you know, it was like an 8-point buck, and they were understandably a little leery of getting real close to it. So they finally had the bright idea of chasing it around and around the tree until it wrapped itself up and was stuck against the tree, and then they could put a blanket over it and hold it and cut the rope loose. So it was kind of cool. Alpharetta police spokesman George Gordon said an officer responded to a call from a citizen and summoned firefighters from Fire Station 86 to the scene to conduct the rescue. Now Santa has all his deer, Gordon told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Here's another kind of similar one from UPI Odd News. And there is a website called UPI Odd News, if you want to look up these things. They're kind of funny. This is from the Dalles in Oregon, however you say that, the Dalles. On December 22nd, police in Oregon slid a canoe across a frozen pond to help rescue a young deer stranded in the middle of the ice. Oregon State Police shared photos of officers venturing into the middle of the pond to rescue the yearling. A passing motorist spotted the stranded deer, who was struggling to stand due to lack of traction on the ice, KGW reported. State police responded to the 9/11 call and used the drift boat to cross the pond where a state wildlife biologist carried the deer back to solid ground. Once the rescuers were able to get the animal off the ice, it ran off into the woods and is expected to make a full recovery, police said. Here's another animal story. This is kind of an odd one from Australia in ABC News. Australian fur seal weighing 200 kilograms, so I guess that's about 440 pounds, wanders down Tasmanian street, squashes car. A massive Australian fur seal that turned up on a suburban street in Tasmania, 50 kilometers from the ocean, wow, and sat on a parked car, is on its way back to the wild. Dubbed Lou Seal by police, the wayward animal wandered into Pinquite Road in the Launceston suburb of Newstead in the early hours of Boxing Day. I think that's like just before Christmas. The adult male, estimated to weigh 200 kilograms, was first spotted about 5:45 a.m. in the middle of a road. It scrambled onto a car parked in a driveway and then jumped onto another car parked behind that. The seal was cordoned off by police while waiting for parks and wildlife officers to arrive, with people inside the house unable to leave for several hours. William Gregory was staying at the Newstead home. "We got up and there was this great big seal on the roof of the car, which is definitely not what you'd expect on Boxing Day," he said. "You kind of wake up and you wonder, is this really happening? Am I really seeing this, or am I still dreaming? It did this spectacular maneuver where it slid down the back of the first car and jumped onto the bonnet, which is the hood, of the second car, and scrambled over the top of that." Mr. Gregory said Lou Seal caused only minor damage to both cars. "We'll replace the windscreen and pop a few dents out. They're just old cars, so it doesn't really matter. It's worth it," he said. It was not the first time seals had been spotted in the area. "A couple of long-term locals told me that it's happened a couple of times over the years," Mr. Gregory said. "There's a little estuary right behind our house, so I imagine he just swam out there and found himself out on the street." Parks and wildlife staff tranquilized the hefty creature before moving it onto a trailer. Wildlife biologist Rachel Alderman was not surprised Lou Seal was out and about, given the large population of Australian fur seals in Tasmania. "At this time of year, it's not unusual for us to locate fur seals in rather strange locations," she said. "Most of the breeding colonies are up in Bass Strait, so at this time of the year, all the seals are sort of congregating up in that neck of the woods. There's all sorts of hormones and things on the go that often lead to males roaming around in strange places. In the past, we've found seals in a range of unusual locations, from paddocks to car parks, to even last year we had to retrieve one from a toilet block in a cemetery." I guess that's like the bathroom. Lou Seal is sleeping off the sedative and will be released later at a beach in Tasmania's northwest. Social media was quick to embrace Lou Seal, declared by one person on ABC 936's Facebook page to be an interesting hood ornament. Others were contemplating the insurance claim. "Hope the insurance gives their seal of approval for the claim," said Rachel DeLeon. "Your hood got dents how?" said Chris Carter. "I've seen some unusual bonnet ornaments, but that one's ridiculous," Matt Lello posted. Here's one from Florida, kind of an odd news thing. Florida marathon runner gets lost, goes missing for 12 hours. This is from NBC News. Melissa Kitcher had full intentions of completing her first half marathon Sunday, but it's safe to say she pictured it ending a little differently. Kitcher went missing for nearly 12 hours after running off the trail during the Trail Hog Half Marathon at the Carlton Reserve near Venice in Sarasota County, Florida. "I kept thinking to myself, wow, how do people run these trails? I can't even walk them," she said. "When I hit the power lines, I said, yep, I'm definitely way off course. I'm lost." But how did she manage to get lost? Kitcher said there was no marking to indicate or properly direct her. "The website says you're supposed to be on Jeep trails. So when I came out, there was a Jeep trail, and I figured that was the path I needed to be on," Kitcher explained. The runner ended up 6 or 7 miles off course with no phone. It inconveniently froze up 2 minutes before the start of the race, she said. Race director Thierry Rouillard had this to say about the situation. "It's the worst nightmare for a race director. I love what I do and want everyone to be happy. That was her first half marathon. That was her first trail run. She learned the hard way." Follow the pack, Ms. Kitcher. Kitcher ended running over 16 miles before the Parks Department located her in the reserve about 7:30 p.m. She was uninjured, thirsty, of course, but just happy she could go home. "She was happy when we found her. I'm going to send her a gift package with racing stuff, a finisher's medal and award for the longest Trail Hog half marathon in the history of the event," Rouillard joked. Despite going a little off course, Kitcher already has sights set on redemption. There's the Sarasota Half Marathon on March 19th. I already have that in my head, she said. Everybody keeps telling me no more races. I said, I'm lucky this one's on the street. I advise her to reconnoiter it first. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're doing odd news this holiday season week, and it's just me reading stuff from around the country and the world that's kind of funny and kind of odd and goofy and is in any case not bad news. So that's the whole theme, anti-bad news this week. Here's one called Headaches, Insects, and Yachts, Excuses for Not Filing British Tax Returns. This is from Reuters. My tax return was on my yacht, which caught fire. Just one of the dozens of unusual excuses the British government's tax collector said it receives each year from customers who fail to complete their returns on time. A wasp in my car caused me to have an accident, and my tax return, which was inside, was destroyed, was another, while several blamed children, partners, or colleagues for inadvertently destroying their forms. It's easy to see that some excuses for not completing a tax return on time can be more questionable than others, said Ruth Owen, HMRC Director General of Customer Services. But there will always be help and support available for those who have a genuine excuse for not submitting their return on time, she added in a statement. Generally, taxpayers who self-assess, whatever that is, must meet a deadline on January 31st each year to complete their forms and pay outstanding sums. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs Office, HMRC, said it expects to receive around 11 million self-assessment return forms this year. My wife helps me with my tax return, but she had a headache for 10 days, was one unsuccessful appeal against the HMRC's penalty for late filing, which starts at £100, which is about $125. Others, however, were more simple in their approach. The postman doesn't deliver to my house. That ought to work. All right. Here's one from Tacoma, Washington. Tacoma man creates boombox to deter package thefts, and police say that could be a crime. This is from the Seattle News Tribune. Dateline Tacoma. After the fourth time it happened in recent months, Jareem Barrow was tired of people stealing packages off his South Tacoma front porch. So he created a device to deter them, and on December 11th, set up an alluring bait box containing the contraption. It started off with a bang, as Barrow sat on the couch in his living room. I didn't know what was going on for a minute, he said. I thought it was somebody being shot because I heard her scream, so I grabbed my mace and went outside. Wait a minute, he'd already set up this this bait box with a shotgun shell in it, but he didn't know what had happened. He was just in time to watch the would-be thief scurry away to a waiting car. After all, shotgun blasts do tend to scare people. Barrow's box is pretty simple. It contains a plate holding back a firing pin connected to a string tied to his interior doorknob, kind of like the old how to pull a loose tooth trick. When the box is pulled on hard enough, the plate moves, allowing the firing pin to set off a 12-gauge shotgun blank. Luckily, it's a blank. Cue fleeing thief. I know it's crude, but there's nothing scarier than a 12-gauge, Barrow said. Tacoma Police spokeswoman Loretta Cool said she doesn't think Barrow's box serves as a deterrent or as a good idea. If the would-be package thief is hurt in any way, the homeowner would be responsible, Cool said. She also said she thinks what Barrow's doing might be a crime, but it would be up to prosecutors to make a final call. I believe there are criminal charges, but it would be up to them if they charged or not, Cool said. Barrow's box contraption has lured more than one would-be thief, the News Tribune reported. Yeah, they're right. It's not a deterrent because these people don't all talk to each other. Each one is a separate incident. Another porch pirate came to his front doorstep a couple days after the first woman ran off. Now a well-placed doorbell camera lets Barrow and then the world see the package trap in action, even if he's not home. The man approached the front door tepidly and was spooked by a motion sensor light, but a companion in a getaway car seemed to egg him on, so he went back toward the house to grab the package. Boom! The man left in such a hurry that Barrow ended up with his cell phone. Poetic justice, he said. But because the potential thieves didn't take anything, they could only be charged with trespassing, he said. While scary, Barrow says, the device is safe. He said he's tested the box himself dozens of times, even putting a tomato inside the box one time to simulate flesh. What? It never hurt me once, he said. It didn't hurt the tomato in there either. He says neighbors haven't complained about the device. Instead, they think anything that deters people from stealing things from my porch and theirs is a good thing. Police spokeswoman Cool said that while the department is not thrilled with Barrow's booming box, video from his doorbell camera did help officers track down and arrest an alleged thief recently. Yeah, that would be the better part of the package. All right, here's one from, all over the world. IKEA, that's the department store, begs people to stop sleeping in its stores overnight. This is from USA Today. 2 years ago, IKEA teamed up with Airbnb to invite people to camp out overnight in one of its Aussie locations as a PR stunt. Now the Swedish retailer is pleading with others to stop holding non-sponsored sleepovers in its stores, citing safety issues and warning of possible trespassing charges, the BBC reports. The Guardian notes that about 10 incidents of people hiding until closing time have been logged over the past year, including in the U.S., Canada, Britain, Belgium, the Netherlands, Sweden, Japan, Australia, and Poland. Sounds like one per country, right? The latest happened last weekend in Sweden when two 14-year-olds stayed over in Jönköping. We appreciate that people are interested in IKEA and want to create fun experiences, an IKEA rep tells the BBC, before making clear that sleepovers aren't allowed. The pranks were apparently spurred by an August YouTube video showing what happened overnight in a Belgian IKEA when two teens hid in wardrobes until the store closed, then filmed their exploits. The video, which has nearly 2 million views, shows them jumping on beds, reading bedtime stories, and filling out ratings forms using Swedish meatball as rating icons for the food, drink, and facilities. They left the building undetected when the store opened the next day. Meanwhile, the Washington Post interviews the Belgian pair about the motivation behind their umlau-heavy overnighter. It started as kind of a joke, explains one. I guess that's the end of the interview. All right, here's... Here's a strange one. California man fights DUI charge for driving under the influence of caffeine. This came from The Guardian, which I think is a British newspaper, but it picked up this American story. Caffeine may be the nootropic, whatever that means, brain drug of choice in Silicon Valley. But an hour's drive north in Solano County, California, the stimulant could get you charged with driving under the influence. That is according to defense attorney Stacey Barrett, speaking on behalf of her client, Joseph Schwab. After being pulled over on the 5th of August, 2015, Schwab was charged by the Solano County District Attorney with misdemeanor driving under the influence of a drug. Almost 18 months later, Schwab is preparing to go to trial. The only evidence the DA has provided of his intoxication is a blood test showing the presence of caffeine. Schwab was driving home from work when he was pulled over by an agent from the California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control who was driving an unmarked vehicle. The agent said Schwab had cut her off and was driving erratically. The 36-year-old Union Glazier was given a breathalyzer test which showed a 0.00% blood alcohol level, his attorney said. He was booked into county jail and had his blood drawn, but the resulting toxicology report came back negative for benzodiazepines, cocaine, opiates, THC, carisoprodol, a muscle relaxant, methamphetamine, MDMA, oxycodone, and zolpidem. The sample was screened a second time by a laboratory. They were persistent, determined to get this guy. It was screened a second time by a laboratory in Pennsylvania, according to documents provided to The Guardian, where the sole positive result was for caffeine, a substance likely coursing through the veins of many drivers on the road at any given time. I've never seen this before, said Barrett. I've never even heard of it. Barrett has filed a motion for the case to be dismissed because the charges were not brought until June 2016, nearly 10 months after the incident. If that motion is denied, Schwab will take his case to a jury on the 11th of January, 2017. Sharon Henry, Chief Deputy District Attorney for Solano County, said in a statement that her office was conducting further investigation into this matter. The charge of driving under the influence is not based upon the presence of caffeine in his system, she added. Barrett counters that if the prosecution has evidence of a different drug in her client's system, it should have to provide that to her based on the rules governing criminal proceedings. I've not been provided with any evidence to support a theory of prosecution for a substance other than caffeine at this time, she said, nor have I received any statements, reports, etc., documenting any ongoing investigation since the toxicology report dated November 18, 2015. Henry declined to comment further, citing the right to a fair trial. It's really stupid, said Jeffrey Zender, a forensic toxicologist who frequently testifies in court cases. Over 41 years, Zender said, he has never seen a prosecution for driving under the influence of caffeine. If that's the case, then they better come and arrest me, he joked. California Vehicle Code defines a drug as any substance besides alcohol that could affect a person in a manner that would impair to an appreciable degree his ability to drive normally. Making that case with caffeine would be difficult, Zender said, because the prosecution would have to show that impaired driving was specifically caused by the caffeine and not by any other circumstances. There are no studies that demonstrate that driving is impaired by caffeine, and they don't do the studies because no one cares about caffeine, he said. As for Schwab, he just wants this ordeal to be over. In a statement provided to The Guardian by his attorney, he said his reputation had been damaged. No one believed me that I only had caffeine in my system until I showed them the lab results, he said. I want the charges to be dismissed and my name to be cleared. And by the way, the lawyer wants something else, no doubt. All right, moving on our odd news stories. Thank you for listening to American Variety and to me going on with stories from around the world about odd and interesting and funny news. Some of it Christmas and holiday related and some not. Let's see here. We have one on Think Chronic Homelessness Can Be Eradicated. Want to bet? This is from the Huffington Post. A lot of people dream about making the world a better place, but now you can put your money on it. A website called dreamstore.me allows consumers to purchase futures in plans designed to make the world a better place, whether it be by making the legal system fairer for all, providing medical care for all, or eradicating homelessness. Here's how it works. Say you want to get rid of homelessness. You're supposed to log on to the website and agree to pay a certain amount of money if that goal is achieved in a certain period of time. Oh, Lord. If enough pledges are raised, the company sells these futures to investors who provide the capital to fund the homeless eradication project off the ground. If the project succeeds and homelessness is eradicated worldwide permanently, yeah, right, you and the other buyers pay the money you've pledged to the investors. The investors only get paid if the project succeeds in the allotted time. If, say, homelessness still exists by the time the project ends, you don't pay anything. Wall Street investors buy and sell futures for commodities such as wheat or corn. The idea behind Dream Store is to apply the same techniques to fund projects that help society at large. There are some big projects that government and philanthropy are not equipped to handle, Schechter said. If someone is able to profit from social good, I don't see a problem with that. Schechter's partner Guillermo McLean has a more succinct description. This is like Ayn Rand and Karl Marx having sex, he told Huff Post. Currently, the only Dream Store project available to buyers is Kindness USA 2027, which plans to triple the level of kindness perception in the next 10 years. Okay. Other projects in the planning stages include ending chronic homelessness, making the justice system equal for all, and ensuring health care for all Americans. Well, I think they should go to Shark Tank, because obviously all of the sharks will want to invest right away in the in dreamstore.me. Well, it's been kind of fun reading these things, and I hope you've had some fun listening to them. Thanks to all of you for listening. I want to wish all of you out there a happy, healthy, and prosperous new year. And I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.